comments about how seriously he's taking it.
I think he is taking it seriously. I mean, he's committed to creating a task force that will then form a plan. But again, that's another delay in a way. So you've got this report that's Labour have been in power for a year and a half now. It's going to publish in the summer. Then there'll be a task force. Then there'll be a plan. And it's sort of like that's several years since they were elected. I do think, you know, we've known for more than a decade about the disaster going on in maternity care. Why couldn't he have been elected and implemented some quite simple changes straight away?
Well, that was Eleanor Hayward, health editor of The Times, who joined me now. And Baroness Amos was going to be joining John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive after 4 o'clock today. Well, that is it from me. Thank you so much for your company, not just today, but for this week. Aisha Hazarika is here from 1 o'clock tomorrow. My producer was Lizzie Highfield. Ryan Boyden has been pressing the buttons all week. And on The Times at One next week, it is Andrew Neil. But right now, get ready for Jane Garvey and Fee Glover, because they're here next on Times Radio.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Danny. It is 2 o'clock. Good afternoon. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover with you for the next couple of hours here on Times Radio.
Coming up on our programme today, why did it take so long to recognise the problem of student loans and how do we change that? We'll talk to the former Universities Minister, Michelle Donnellan. The US comedian Ben Palmer set up a fake tip line to report illegal immigrants and people asked him to deport everyone from their ex-wives to their students. He'll tell us what he learnt about his fellow Americans. There's good news for oversharers from Harvard University. We'll hear why confessing your secrets might help you get ahead at work. And after 3:30, our big interview is with Ian Russell, who campaigns to make the world of tech safer for young people after his daughter Molly took her own life.
Here's the news at 2 o'clock. Eliza Phillips.
Thank you. Good afternoon. A bill to legalise assisted dying in England and Wales is likely to fail in the House of Lords. The government is not expected to grant extra time for debate before the current session of Parliament ends. That means it's extremely unlikely to pass before the King's Speech in May. Well, Gordon MacDonald is CEO of Care Not Killing.
There is palliative care available. And, you know, if we properly funded palliative care in this country, then there's no need for anybody to die in pain or have an undignified death. And that's the real scandal here. The scandal is not that there's a prohibition on assisting suicide, because there are many vulnerable people who would be put at risk by that. The scandal is that our politicians consistently refuse to properly fund palliative care. And so one in four people are not getting their palliative care needs met.
Meanwhile, Jersey has voted to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults. It's the second of the British Isles to do so after the Isle of Man. The vote was 32 in favour and 16 against. Small boat arrivals rose by 13% compared to 2024. That's what new figures show. More than 41,000 people arrived by this illegal route. Meanwhile, 101,000 claimed asylum last year. That's a 4% drop from 2024. And just over 30,000 asylum seekers were being housed temporarily in UK hotels at the end of 2025, the lowest level for 18 months. Well, Madeleine Sumption is director of the Migration Observatory.
The big challenge here is that it's very difficult using an enforcement-based approach to prevent people from moving across the channel, because if you take down one smuggling gang, this is a thriving market and new people will move in to fill the space as long as there is still very high demand for people wanting to come to the UK. What we've seen recently, we've seen an increase in the number of Eritrean nationals, for example, coming to the UK. There are some indications that the price of being smuggled across the channel has decreased.
Police and teachers are braced for school wars being whipped up on social media, including teenagers being encouraged to bring knives to class. The Met Police have begun an operation in response to social media posts, dividing schools into teams and urging them to be violent. Well, Laura Trott is the Shadow Education Secretary.
We have a threat of violence in schools across the country because of a social media fuel campaign that's not just on TikTok, it's also on Snap and other platforms, that nothing is being done about. Parents are being written to by the police warning them about what is going on in their schools. How have we allowed this to happen as a country? This is fundamentally wrong. Social media is not safe for young people. This is just another example. I don't see any government action on this, and I definitely don't see any government action more broadly on social media.
And Spain will be able to veto the entry of British travellers to Gibraltar and refuse residency permits on security grounds under a post-Brexit treaty. The agreement published earlier ends almost a decade of limbo for the British overseas territory since the referendum result. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Lights are dimmed, the heating's up, we're here until 4 o'clock. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. We have special lighting, don't we?
Just
a little bit more generous for the older lady.
So I think there are four settings, aren't there? Ooh. So there's normal, and then there's slightly less bright, and then there's dim, and then there's super dim, and we're super dim.
We're super dim with
it's
you.
It's come to that.
Super dim in every sense of the term, until 4 o'clock here on Times Radio, when somebody much more erudite takes over, John Pienaar at four. But until then, what have we got for you? Well, could there be something for students in the spring statement next week? We'll get the view of the former Tory MP, former Universities Minister Michelle Donnellan, who I'm told is in the building and is on her way into the studio. The French are fed up with foreign tourists needing expensive mountain rescue services, and they'd quite like these people to cough up themselves. You can understand why. More on that later. Good news if you happen to be part of a somewhat navel-gazing podcast. It turns out that research from Harvard suggests that oversharing at work benefits you. That is actually good news for us, isn't it?
It's very good news.
It might be why we're quite chipper.
If you've never joined in the fun that is off air with Jane and Fee, if you can just imagine that pan of milk on your stove just constantly boiling over and ruining things, that's us in chat form.
Well, we haven't been unsuccessful. In fact, you'll find it in all good podcast shops. Off air with Jane and Fee, there's another edition tonight, plummets at about 6 p.m, perhaps a little bit later. We'll also ask today, can the government really solve homelessness? And we'll get the view of Lord John Bird of The Big Issue, the founder of The Big Issue. Vassos the Alexander will be here with sport. And today, hey, big spenders. Manchester United have spent nearly £700 million in the last 5 years on players, and they've won nothing in that time. And be aware, it is Wickes Proud as a Peacock Thursday. There is time for you to take part. Before 4 o'clock, we will just award a £250 Wickes voucher to the winner of this week's Proud as a Peacock. All you have to do, Fee, is...
you just send us a very simple message, 0333 003 2353, or email to janeandfee@times.radio, just describing something that you're very proud about this week. It can be the actions of someone you know and love, maybe someone you know and don't love, maybe someone you'd like to love. Shall I stop there?
Or you can
just talk about something that you've done yourself. And it can be funny, it can be lighthearted, it can be very serious. Just something quite succinct, we would ask.
Yes.
And we will review them and award that voucher just before 4 o'clock.
Excellent. And our big guest is...
it's Ian Russell, who is the father of Molly Russell, who died by suicide when she was just 14 years old after viewing harmful content. He has dedicated his life to changing things for the better. And he's got a new film out. You'll be able to see it on Channel 4 tonight. It's called Molly versus the Machines. It is chilling and brutal and very, very brilliant, because what he's done in the company of the director Mark Silver and the writer Shoshana Zuboff is to turn the AI technology on itself. So the film opens with an AI prompt that is asking AI to explain the life and death of Molly Russell. So all of that coding, all of those algorithms, all of that scraping, all of that content that definitely contributed to her death is then asked to look at her life. Gosh, that's it is quite something, Jane.
Yeah,
I've never seen anything like it.
Is it a tough watch?
It is a very tough watch. It's a tough watch because you see Ian really relive those last days and hours of his daughter's life, because they've managed to recreate it through the pathway that she took on her phone. And they've used AI to actually recreate her bedroom and her house. And also, Jane, he talks to her friends who are now in their 20s. Their understanding of the world that they were put in is so clear now. It is incredibly... it is very difficult to watch, but it's just so informative. I mean, I think if you only wanted to watch one thing to tell you where we're at with the very difficult, difficult mire of social media, it would be that film. You won't come out of it the same, but the Russell family haven't come out of it the same, and that's the point all the way through.
That's Ian Russell with us here on Times Radio after 3:30 this afternoon. Let's have a quick look before we talk student loans at the most read stories on the Times website.
In at number three, Jeffrey Epstein trafficked women through British airports as late as 2019. The paedophile financier booked flights for young women from or through the UK up until the month before his arrest. That's the latest thing to come out of the files. Second most read story, MPs wince as Kemi Badenoch lands some very low blows. Lindsay Hoyle made a statement about Lord Mandelson's arrest before PMQs, while Kemi Badenoch's brutal jabs about pedo defenders turned a session into a brawl. Thousands of families set to lose key inheritance tax allowance is the most read piece on the Times website today. The government's raid on pensions will make it harder to pass on assets tax-free from April next year. You can read all of those articles on thetimes.com. You need your digital subscription. If you don't have one, you can get one. Go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
Have Manchester United really won the FA Cup and the League Cup in the last couple of years? We'll check on that, Stephen, in Aberdeenshire. I certainly don't remember it. Right, let's talk student loans, because this is a subject that's very much in the mix at the moment, and plans to cut the burden of student loans on graduates could come, we're told, as early as next week, alongside the spring statement. The Prime Minister has pledged to look at ways to make the system fairer after calls from the Tories and the Times campaign to end the graduate rip-off. Suggested changes have included lowering interest rates or raising the threshold for when former students start making those repayments. Well, Michelle Donnellan is here. Welcome, Michelle. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thank you.
You were the Science and Innovation Secretary in the Sunak cabinet. Before that, you were actually the minister responsible for universities.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
Right, and you went to university yourself.
I did, yeah.
Presumably, I'm going to be a bit careful because age comes into this, but did you have a student loan?
I did. I had one for my general living costs, and tuition was paid up front then, and was, I think it was just over £1,000, so it's not comparable
it
to
really
now
isn't.
At all.
No, we do forget it was 2012, wasn't it, when they
which predates, so that had already happened, but I entered Parliament in 2015, and that was already the status quo. What I did when I was in office was I made sure that we were reforming Plan 5, which is different to what has got all the attention at the moment. That's predominantly been around Plan 2. And I made sure that Plan 5 was RPI only, which is what the Conservatives are saying they would do for Plan 2, because Plan 2 is charging RPI plus 3%.
Okay, we're very much in the weeds very early on in this conversation. Take me through, what is Plan 5? What age would you be to be on Plan 5?
Oh, I wouldn't be able to tell you the exact age now, but a broad spectrum of people are now on Plan 2.
Yeah, that's the one that's really starting to bite.
Yeah, and that's the one that's just generally unfair. And it's unfair for a couple of reasons. So the first reason is the fact that you're not just paying interest. You're paying interest plus 3%. So you've got this perverse situation now where a lot of people are paying more
than they borrowed.
But also they're paying more than the rate of interest that they're paying on their mortgage. So that doesn't seem fair.
Sorry, what I meant to say is they actually end up owing more than they borrowed. And that can be a couple of years, more than a couple of years after they started paying it off.
Yeah, so there's a few ways it's unfair. It's unfair because of the actual rate plus the interest. It's unfair because they're paying a hell of a lot more back than they borrowed, like you said. Also, it's not working because we know that the graduate premium is waning. People can't get jobs now when they're leaving university. And that's for a number of reasons. It's fundamentally because of the Blair con, as I call it, where he told everybody they should go to university. It's because quality is mixed. It's also because people might not do the right course where they want to end up. And they would have been better placed doing an apprenticeship or even a degree apprenticeship. So you've got all of that going on. And the people that suffer the most, actually, are those middle earners, because if you're at the lower end, you might never reach the repayment threshold to actually pay
anything
back.
You might not even start.
No.
And after 30 years, it's written off anyway.
Yeah. And if you're at the upper end of earnings, you'll pay it off quicker, so you'll pay less interest. But if you're in that middle scenario, it's just accumulating and accumulating. And at the same time, you know, you've still got all the other costs that everybody else has got. You want to get on the property ladder, et cetera, as well.
Yeah. Now, I appreciate you weren't in Parliament at the time, but nevertheless, this was a Tory policy. There's no doubt about that. And I think some people are thinking, well, you know, Kemi Badenoch, she's making some good points on this, but hang on, it was them.
Well, I think that you do have to appreciate the fact that this is a Conservative Party that's owning mistakes, saying things that haven't worked, being brutally honest and being forthright on the changes that need to be made. And Kemi wasn't an MP then either. So you can't really start saying that it was her fault. It was the brand's fault. Yes, I buy that. But we have to own those mistakes and change course when we recognise that it's not fair and it's not working.
What would you do?
So I would do what I wanted to do when I was a university minister. So I wanted to change Plan 2 as well, so that it was, I'd actually make it CPI, not just RPI, which is even fairer.
Can you just define what CPI is?
So the problem you've got on RPI is retail price index, which means that it's not as fair as CPI. And what you've got happening...
CPI means?
Consumer price index. Yep. Yep. You've got the situation now where the government is naturally progressing and moving over to CPI. So eventually everything will be that. It'll be consistent. But unlike the triple lot for pensioners, you're getting a situation where graduates are not necessarily getting the best deal on interest and they don't have another choice. It's not like when you go and get a mortgage, you can shop around. Do I choose Halifax or do I choose NatWest?
It's just the one option.
You've got that one option. So I'd do that and I'd get rid of this plus 3%, which is bizarre. Martin Lewis, as you'll have seen, gone to...
stormed onto the set.
Indeed. His big campaign is about the threshold. So that's the rate at which you start paying anything back.
And that's currently set at?
28,000. And the problem the government have got their themselves into this mess is that they froze it. And they said before they came to power that they were going to actually reduce the burden of debt on graduates. And now they've increased it. And that's really unfair because if you signed up for a commercial loan, you couldn't have the terms changed on you that you'd signed for. So why should we do that as a government? That's just not fair.
You mentioned the triple lock, and that's interesting, isn't it? Why can't somebody, a political party, be bold and say, do you know what? We can't afford the triple lock for the pensioners anymore. Young people, students, former students are getting utterly clobbered. Let's do that. Let's get rid of the triple lock.
So I definitely disagree with that. So I don't think this is about pitting one generation against another.
But it's about is at the moment. It's a lot harder to be young in lots of ways.
But there are also pensioners that are struggling too. And I think that that's a bit of a generalisation. When I was a member of Parliament, I saw many elderly people that felt just above the pension credit. So they didn't get any additional support and they didn't have the ability to go and get a job. They were able-bodied. They'd left the employment market a long time ago. So they had no other options either. And you could play that game forever. You could say, well, should we take it from defence? Should we take it from the NHS? You know, there are a multitude of ways that you could do it. But I think the basic principle here is this is just not fair. And the government have been backed into a corner on this because it's got more and more attention. It's snowballing. They're going to do another U-turn. Are we up to like U-turn 16 now or something?
Yeah.
And they'll be forced into.
You mentioned changing. You tried to do something to Plan 5, but you couldn't do anything for Plan 2. Mm-hmm. Why were you stymied?
So at the time that I was in office, we were just navigating out of COVID. We spent a heck of a fortune on supporting people through furlough, etc. We were, there wasn't the funding there available from the Treasury to be able to do that. Had we been in more normal times, like we'd anticipated to be when we won office, I think we would have had the luxury to be able to look at that. And I saw Plan 5 as the first step towards a journey of rectifying these wrongs and making it fairer. But I think we do also have to have a debate about not everybody has to go to university. We need transparency within the system. What is right for people?
Bring in the listeners, I hope you don't mind. Sorry. John says, can you remind Michelle, it was the Tories who froze the threshold for 10 years of their years in power.
But we also have to remember that this is the government that is in office now. And they are the ones that are making
still
the
no
decisions.
Denying no, but, what happened on your and your party's watch.
No, but there's a bit of a difference, isn't there? Because we didn't go into an election saying, we will reduce this, and then do the opposite. We didn't do that. And we saw Theresa May dramatically increase it. She increased it by over £5,000, if memory serves me right. Yes, yeah. The threshold. You have now a government that has actively sold to students and to recent graduates a manifesto pledge that they've gone back on less than 2 years in office without a really good explanation or alternative offer for what they're doing for that cohort, when they can see that graduate employment is at an all-time low. You know, these people are leaving university and thinking, how am I ever going to get on the housing ladder? How am I ever going to be able to have a family? Maybe I should leave the country. And that's the challenge. We need to have a bright future for those people.
Mm. And some of the recent graduates had a patchy time at school, to put it mildly, because they were often being taught at home or on Zoom or on a phone. Yeah. I mean, it was rubbish, really. And some people who've been to university and worked hard and graduated won't have had any form of in-house teaching either. I mean, there's all kinds of talk about compensation for those graduates who were at uni during COVID.
So it depends which cohort they were as well, in terms of what year, in terms of when COVID struck. And of course, you went on a bit of a journey, and then the universities opened up. And what I was trying to do as minister was get those universities open up as soon as possible in a safe way. And then when it was safe to do so, we did have some of those outliers where they had certain faculties within their university that were a bit reluctant to reopen, and that was really wrong. But you had also some fantastic best practice from universities that were really pioneering and innovative in terms of their use of technology. So I think we do have to be careful not to paint it as all one picture. But certainly some people didn't get what they signed up for, and they didn't get what they paid for. And then coming out of university and not being able to get a job either.
It's no fun.
No.
So tell me, what do you expect to hear in the spring statement?
So I think that the spring statement is going to be quite dull and boring, and that's what all the commentary
is
saying.
You are speaking as a former Tory minister.
No, well, the last ones haven't been dull, have they? They've been anything but dull, you know, and you've had all the build-up beforehand where they panic everybody and business investment drops, and then it's not quite as bad as you thought it was. But this one, you haven't seen that same kind of chatter as much, because I think that what they're going to prioritise is stability, trying to reassure the markets. There's not that much money to play with. We know there's a big argument between Treasury and Defence, and now there's potentially this U-turn here where they're going to have to find some cash quite quickly. So I think that there'll be no rabbits out of the hat necessarily, and also I don't think there'll be anything that is dramatically awful for people either. But we'll see. That's only a prediction.
Very briefly, are you enjoying life on the out?
Yeah, I actually see my children. I think beforehand, my eldest, who was very little at the time, thought that I was just daddy's friend that used to come now and again. So I do actually see them, which is wonderful. And I've learnt what a weekend is again, which is magnificent.
Thank you very much for coming
in. Thank
you. That's Michelle Donnellan, former Conservative MP, and was at one point the Universities Minister. Thank you.
And thank you for all of your texts so far this afternoon. Frank says, before you ban the triple lock, how about banning the index linking of civil service pensions and yours from the BBC?
Well, tell you what, Frank, we've been high on the hog there.
So I think we would just like to reassure Frank that not very much of your money was ever spent on a pension for myself or Jane Garvey. I was freelance, I think, up until I had to, due to IR35, become embroiled in the BBC pay system. So only about 3 years of pensionable salary was ever available to me. But it's a very good point to make. It really annoys people. It really annoys people that we don't talk enough about the, in inverted commas, gold-plated pensions available to many people who are working to change pensions under the direction of a government, of course. But we talked about it quite a lot on the podcast, and we had our minds boggled by some of the figures that have been available to people in the past, not necessarily people at the moment. But don't worry, Frank. Please don't worry about 0.00001p of your TV licence would have gone in our direction.
I mean, I know Frank's a regular listener. I'm sure he's a good man, so we owe him transparency. But my sister in broadcasting is correct. Neither of us will be living high on the hog on any BBC pensions because we weren't really on the staff. Right, I hope that's... I mean, is that enough transparency?
I think that's plenty of oversharing. Yes, but apparently it's good for our career, so let's carry on. Coming up, why could getting into trouble on a French mountain now leave you with a massive bill? 22 minutes past two, Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wickes. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all the sale offers at wickes.co.uk or just visit your local Wickes store.
Henry Bonsu on Times Radio. Trusted journalism.
What about the government's approach here? Is this the kind of thing we need at scale?
The latest breaking news, expert analysis and well-informed discussion.
Was that the tactic to keep the language as vague as possible until you really had to sharpen it?
And diverse opinion.
For any country to develop in the 21st century, there has to be education of the vast majority of the population.
Henry Bonsu, tonight from 10 on Times Radio.
Step out of your ordinary and discover something new on it.
Say yes to summer with the biggest ever TUI sale with a My TUI account. Say yes to flexible payment options. Say yes to free kids' places, even in the school summer holidays. With so many holiday options to choose from, you pick it, we sort it. Holiday countdown started. TUI, Atoll and Apta Protected. Booking T's and C's apply. Selected departures. Minimum spend applies. Subject to availability. See website for details.
Ah. Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans and pickups with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest centre, Stephen Eagle, Toyota Horsham, or visit toyota.co.uk/vansavings for more details. Savings on selected vans and pickups ordered by the 31st of March 2026. UK residents. See toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes. Right now, the kitchen and bathroom sale is on. There are options to suit every budget and every home. Browse all the kitchen and bathroom sale offers at wickes.co.uk. Right, just a couple of contenders so far. And don't worry, Kyra, you are still in with a chance this week. Kyra always messages us every week, proud that my offer has been accepted on a property. It'll be my first time living alone, which is a little daunting, but I'm excited even for all the DIY jobs which you will need doing. And this one comes in from Matthew, who says, what's making me proud is that it's now 365 days since I stopped drinking special brew. Well done.
No mean achievement. This is from Suzanne. I'd like to nominate my husband, Chris, for your Proud as a Peacock weekly award. Not only does he volunteer 2 days a week at Oxfordshire Wildlife Rescue, who are dedicated to the rescue, rehab and release of all types of native wildlife, he also designs and builds houses for the animals in his own time and with his own money to keep them warm and dry during their recuperation at the centre. I think he thoroughly deserves the award. If he wins, he can make so many more houses to help the rescued animals. The hedgehogs are, and less are, the foxes. Well, thank you, says Suzanne. I mean, I don't know, there's something about foxes.
A vermin.
Well,
send us a WhatsApp, 0333 003 2353, or email janeandfee@times.radio. We'll announce the winner at the end of the show. Don't forget the Wickes kitchen and bathroom sale is on. You can explore all the sale offers at wickes.co.uk, or you can just pop along to your local Wickes store. Now, ski season is in full swing, and hopefully listeners who've hit the slopes already this year have made it back in one piece. But as mountain sports continue to boom in the French Alps, more people are having accidents, and the cost of rescuing them is rising. The French state has long paid for most mountain rescues, but the public spending watchdog, the Cour des Comptes, is recommending foreign nationals now be made to foot the bill. David Chazan has written this story for The Times. My apologies for the pronunciation, David. Would you like to do it better?
The Cour des Comptes, but don't worry. I mean, it's the equivalent of the National Audit Office, really. And with France's...
It's not sexy then, David. Let's leave it.
Well, exactly. Cour des Comptes sounds much nicer, doesn't it?
Yeah. Really? So tell us a bit more. How much are holidaymakers costing the French in the mountains?
Well, the average cost of a single rescue is nearly 11,000 euros, so that's about £10,000. And in total, rescues are costing French taxpayers something like 110 million euros a year. Now, that is a 44% increase over the past decade. So there are worries about this. France is facing a ballooning debt and deficit, so the French authorities are scrabbling around for ways to save money, and some think that this could be one of them.
Is there no way that if, let's say, Jane or I had an accident up a mountain, we're taken out full insurance, you know, the French authorities might pay in the moment for our rescue? I might leave Jane there. She might leave me there. But actually, we would be able to recoup the money and it would go back to the authorities. Does that ever happen?
It does, yeah, because at the larger ski resorts, if you have an accident at a big ski resort, they tend to employ private helicopter companies for rescues and sometimes private doctors. And they will bill you or your insurance company for the cost of that. Now, most skiers do take out insurance. The bigger resorts always recommend that they do so. So in that scenario, the French state wouldn't really be liable.
What about the expertise of the people who are having these accidents? I mean, we cover quite a lot of stories about people being absolutely daft and attempting to go up mountains in this country, ill prepared for the weather, some of them in flip-flops or Crocs or daft stuff like that. It would be irritating if a French taxpayer was having to foot the bill for that kind of stupidity.
Yeah, well, they are actually, especially on Mont Blanc, which is one of the most popular places for tourists to try to go up. Some of them try in trainers. And the local mayor has long been calling for an end to what he calls tourist excursions on Mont Blanc. And he says that if people take too many risks, whether they're French or foreign, then they should be made to pay at least some of the cost of rescuing them. He says the amount they would pay ought to be proportionate to the risks they'd taken or the degree of recklessness involved. But, you know, legal officials say it's very difficult to determine that because you've got to take in all sorts of factors, including age, experience and physical condition. Obviously, if you try to climb Mont Blanc wearing flip-flops, then it's a fairly easy judgment to make. But other cases might be less black and white.
For sure. So is the idea, David, that people would be asked to pay in the moment at a rescue, or this would turn into quite a kind of further down the line chasing payment thing?
Well, according to the recommendations by the French financial watchdog, it's likely to be a long, drawn-out process. They would have to work out what the exact cost was, because these are emergency services involved, the fire brigade, the mountain police, and so it could take quite a while before you actually received a bill for it, and you could then challenge it in court. So I think it'd be a long, very long drawn out process.
Yeah, so they'd never do something like you can't leave the country until you've paid your bill.
No, I don't think so. I mean, that would be interesting. You know, Britain's being detained, you know, near Mont Blanc for getting into trouble because they were ill prepared. No, I don't think there's any suggestion of that so far.
David, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. You can read David's story in the Times today if you've got a digital subscription that's available to you.
It certainly is. Now, coming up, a man reporting his former wife, a nursery school teacher who suspects the parents of a very young pupil. We'll talk about the fake tip line lifting the lid on America's immigration crackdown. You're with Times Radio. Here are the headlines. Eliza Phillips.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's almost certain the assisted dying bill for England and Wales will not become law. It has to get through before the end of the parliamentary session in May, But it's understood the government's not setting aside any more time to debate hundreds of amendments that have been put forward. Well, Dame Esther Ranson has been campaigning for the bill and says she's saddened by its demise.
Fortunately, I have the funds to go to Zurich and get Dignitas to help me because Swiss law allows that. But I can't take my family with me. I can't allow them to know when I'm going because if I do, under the current criminal law, they will be investigated by the police, suspected of murdering me, which is the last thing they need when they're facing bereavement anyway.
Meanwhile, Jersey's Parliament has given final approval to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults who live on the island. Spain will be able to veto the entry of British travellers to Gibraltar and refuse residency permits on security grounds under a post-Brexit treaty. The agreement, published earlier, ends almost a decade of limbo for the British Overseas Territory since the referendum result. The man who killed 10-year-old Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman is in a hospital after being attacked in a prison in County Durham. In Huntley's understood to have suffered serious injuries. And a group of immigration officers have appeared in court accused of stealing money and items from migrants arriving in the UK on small boats. Six men deny charges, including money laundering, dating back to 2021 and 2022. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Step out of your ordinary and discover something new on a Cunard voyage from Hayes Travel. Book selected 2026 and 2027 voyages before the 2nd of March and enjoy 10% off. That's 10% off the Norwegian fjords, transatlantic crossings, Europe, the Caribbean and more. This offer must end March the 2nd, so book your Cunard voyage with a low deposit at Hayes Travel today. Conditions apply, at all protected.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Daryl Morris brings you a first look at the Sunday Times front page splash every Saturday night from 10:30.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Ready to start planning your new kitchen or bathroom? If you'd like a personalised design, the Wix free design service can guide you through the whole process, including a free home measure. Book today at wix.co.uk.
John Pienaar takes over from us at 4 o'clock. We were just referencing our lighting situation in the studio, John. When you come in, the lights go up,
yeah.
They go back up to full power.
Yeah, it's you guys sit here in pitch black as far as I can see.
We'd like candles, really. As if we could.
We really would.
Yeah, we're on super dim level, but you're on normal. Says so much. What's on your show today?
So, lots of really interesting things to talk about. The state of our maternity services in this country. There have been lots of reports about this over a good few years now. And we've seen, though, the mortality rates, the sort of the racism, the cover-up of error. But they're no less shocking as they keep on coming out. And there's the question, why are we still reading these things? I'm going to be talking to Baroness Amos, who's the author of the report, and will write the final report on the whole thing, so that's really good to get her perspective.
Do you know what, John, I also think it's just the tip of the iceberg. The stuff that gets reported back to officialdom is just a small percentage of the real experience. Because, as you know, when you leave hospital with a baby, you are so busy with that baby. If something bad has happened to you, chances are you might not report it in the same way that you would do if you weren't so up against it.
Yeah.
So it is the really tragic and traumatic cases that are reported, or the poor, poor parents who leave hospital with a disabled baby or no baby at all. But there are just thousands of people's experiences that have never been noted. You know, you just move on with your life and you go, okay, I just got to get on with that. So it really is dire, isn't it?
And that'll be one of my questions to Baroness Amos. Is this just, as it were, the tip of the iceberg? Because what we've seen over and over again is shocking enough, and it's perfectly believable that that culture, the sort of culture of cover-up in a system under enormous pressure, problems with culture, problems with resources, all of these things, they come together in a way that, which is, you know, in so many cases, obviously not all cases, but in so many cases, really horrific. So we'll talk to her. I also think the story of defence today is really remarkable. We've got used, frankly, to being told by various generals, usually ex-generals, speaking with some authority, that we may just be quite close to a full-scale war. But now we've heard it from a serving defence minister, which takes it to a different level. You know, the armed forces minister, Al Cairns, says it could be 3 years before we're in a major war, and we're nowhere near in shape to fight that war, still less win it. And he then goes on to say he thinks the Prime Minister agrees with him. So it's a bit of a challenge to the Chancellor, and it drags the Prime Minister into the difficult position that when I tried to put this to John Healey, the Defence Secretary, earlier on in the week, he was, as one might expect, stonewalling away. But now he's got his minister, fellow minister, there, answering all these questions in absolute technicolor. So I'm going to be talking about that with a number of people, including General Sir Richard Sheriff, a former Supreme Command officer in NATO, and much else besides.
Thank you, John. John starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Now we'll go to the States, and Donald Trump's immigration crackdown is one of the biggest efforts of his presidency. It's not universally popular, it's fair to say. A poll at the start of February found that 60% of Americans disapprove of the actions of ICE, the Immigration Enforcement Agency. But approval does tend to divide on partisan lines. A majority of Republicans do back ICE, despite two American citizens being killed by its agents. Now, Ben Palmer is a comedian. He specialises in what we call pranks, I suppose. He decided he'd set up a fake tip line for people to report suspected illegal migrants, looking behind the curtain of the crackdown, effectively. So here's a little taster for you. Here's Ben talking to one caller.
And it looks like they have a child who was born in New York, which makes them an American citizen.
Yeah.
So we're looking to deport the parents and leave the child.
Right. Like I said, I don't know if they're here illegally. I just think it's odd, you know? It's very odd.
What did you say was odd?
It's just odd for them to even be here. Like, I'm a teacher at a school. Okay, I know schools. I know the whole law about schools. I mean, they seem like nice people or whatever, but I looked them up in our files, and I was like, oh, she was born in Honduras, and he's born in El Salvador. So right there, it's like, okay, maybe I'm on the right path. You know, they drop off their kid every day.
So their kid is their kid a student at your school?
Yes. Yes,
one of your
kindergarten.
Okay, so now you want to get his parents deported?
Well, I'm just saying that if they're taking up resources from our county,
okay.
I'm not into illegal people being here.
I mean, if the son's in kindergarten, what, is 6 or 7,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he's probably like 5 or 6.
And he was born in New York, so that means, assumingly, they've been in America for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And now we're going to go ahead and just remove them.
Are you, like, questioning that, or what do you know?
Yeah. Sorry, no, I'm just writing this down for my own personal notes, and my supervisor teaches at school, wants kindergarten child's parents deported.
You make it sound terrible. You make it sound like it's terrible, but...
Oh, well, I'm just writing down what you're telling me.
Okay. Well, okay.
Set sounds terrible. Let's see, I can write that down, too, I guess.
We can talk to Ben now. Hello, Ben. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Now, you're in Tennessee, where it's first thing in the morning, so we're very grateful to you. what gave you this idea?
I do a lot of fake websites. One thing kind of leads to another. Started with pretending to be ChatGPT. That was one of my first parody websites. And, always just looking up to see what's going on in the news, what the current state of affairs are. And so I believe it was just like after the election, I made that website slash hotline.
Yes. I mean, what's very chilling to most people's ears, though not everybody's, is that she's so matter of fact about it all, isn't she? Until you just give her back what she said to you and she doesn't like it. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it kind of makes her uncomfortable once she has to like sit with the outcome of what would happen if me, who she thinks is, an actual agent, would go ahead and you know, deport those people and what that would look like. But to her, it was like, oh, I'm just going to call, make this call on the phone, and then that's it. I can hang up and let the ICE or whoever take it from there, and I don't have to think about it. But I kind of just made her think about it, I guess.
Now, I should say that your conversation with this anonymous woman, we don't know her name. I don't think you know her name either, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I do. It's
no, we don't need to mention it now necessarily.
Yeah.
But you did, I know, go on to tell her. You called her back to say that actually you checked, and in fact, the parents were in the USA entirely legitimately.
Yeah.
And she sort of takes it, but she wants to speak to your supervisor, who you decide is called Brian.
Yeah. So I called her back and I said, yeah, so now you don't have to look at the kid, you know, and she didn't like what I was saying. Oh, she didn't like the line where I also said, oh, yeah, because, you know, that little fella could have been a threat to national security. And, you know, that kind of, she didn't like that. That was rude, apparently. I was being rude, you know, not as rude as trying to send someone back to another country and separate a family. But no, it was rude.
Yes, Anonymous thought it was very rude. Okay, she just felt you'd gone too far there. What does this tell us about the human condition? Because we know there have been some terrible examples in history of perfectly reasonable people on the face of it who were happy to dob their neighbours in to the Nazis, for example. I mean, it's happened everywhere and at all times, hasn't it?
Yeah, that seems like it's been the theme. I've been taking a lot of these calls and, you know, a lot of people, well, they say, I'm just doing what I thought I was supposed to do. I'm just exercising my right as an American and this is my duty. But then once they start to think about like what's actually happening, you know, they have like this cognitive dissonance.
And has it made you depressed or...
I was sad.
Yeah, it is. I think sad is actually my overwhelming reaction.
Yeah, after I did the kindergarten call, I was sad. And when I, you know, I do comedy. When I put it out there, I knew it was going to do okay. But also, I'm like, where's the, like, I know there's a couple funny parts, but I'm like, man, it's overwhelmingly sad. So I wasn't sure how it was going to be received, to be honest. Obviously, I'm not surprised that people were outraged, but. Yeah, when you're trying to make things funny, it's that one particularly was kind of challenging. We're just talking about like a 5-year-old kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty horrible, actually, when you think about it. You've also had people just trying to get rid of their exes. I mean, that's a slightly lighter note, isn't it?
Yeah, those have been interesting. I try to stay out of those because, you know, doing what I do, I try not to get involved in people's personal life because I never know, you know, there's always a story and a revenge deportation is not something I'm going to look into.
No. But we should say there is a really important truth to all this. ICE does solicit tips and tip-offs, doesn't it? It wants the public to get involved.
Yeah. Yeah. I had someone call me the other day and he was mad because he was on hold with ICE for 45 minutes and never got to anybody. So, yeah, I mean, there's tons of people calling them. And I guess if they're busy, then they'll end up calling me and I'll try to help as much as I can.
And I just want to bring in just a quick mention of one of our listeners. And he's Charles, who says this section is just a left wing pop at anyone who complains about illegal immigration. Is it? I don't know, Charles. What would you say about that, Ben? Or is it simply that you're illustrating the uncomfortable truth at the heart of all this, that some people are more than happy to cooperate with political policies that are or could be interpreted as just downright cruel?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, when I do these, I'm not like doing it to show anything in particular. I'm just taking the calls and listening to what they have to say. But now after I've done them over a while, you start to see patterns form. But yeah, also I'm still trying to understand British lingo and slang, so I'm not kind of sure what he meant.
Well, he just thinks you and I are quite liberal, Ben.
I mean, y'all got those over there too?
Yeah, we have a few. There are a few British liberals.
Hey, you know, maybe he can take care of the 5-year-old when the parents are gone. See if
Yes, all right. You're actually not. I mean, you don't style yourself as a political comedian, do you? I mean, how do you think of yourself?
I feel like I always end up doing stuff that's somewhat political, more social commentary stuff. I try to stay out of it, but I end up back in it sometimes on accident. But you know, I like doing, you know, fun pranks, but after a while I also like to have those pranks or bits have a little bit of substance to them. Otherwise I kind of start to feel silly or stupid. So it's nice to be able to do something that kind of, has a value to it.
Yeah. I mean, over this side of the Atlantic, the USA has just never seemed more polarized. Is it a good or a bad time to be attempting to earn your money out of comedy there?
I think it's a good time, like regardless of politics. I think you can sell more tickets if you, you know, go one way or another or do something controversial on one side. As far as comedy goes, though, I think it's never been a better time. But that's besides the fact that the politics. I mean, honestly, probably it's you can do more comedy because you can do regular comedy and then you can, yeah, take that lane where you go, I'm going to be a political comedian.
Yeah. We do need to make clear, I think, for legal purposes, that you don't at any point claim to be ICE, do you?
No.
You don't say that. I know you say that if people can't get through to ICE, they'll call you. But you never said you were ICE.
No, whenever they ask, I usually just start rambling. I say I'm with the ISIS, and then I just keep talking. And then I keep talking until they forget that I said that, and then they never even question it.
Ben, thank you very much. That's Ben Palmer enjoying his breakfast in Tennessee. We appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Do you know what? I've got a little bit of a soft spot for that American drawl. I could listen to it all day.
I don't know whether Ben's from Tennessee or whether he's just there.
No, but it's that very, very slow delivery as well. Yeah. I like it, Jane. Yeah.
Well, he had that laconic charm, didn't he?
This is an anonymous text. I reported multiple issues, and this is about maternity care, which is going to be the focus of the beginning of John Pienaar's programme this afternoon. I reported multiple issues, including a sweep that was given to me without my consent, but I didn't get around to reporting until 14 months postpartum. I was told I'd missed the deadline because you have to report issues within 12 months. As you pointed out, you often are busy and not in the right headspace when you have a newborn. If I'd known there was a 12-month deadline, I would have tried harder, but I had a lot of other things going on. You will want to listen to John Pienaar's discussion today because it continues to be a source of, I think for an awful lot of people, it's a vein of very, very high anxiety actually in this country.
It certainly is. And the points you make are really good ones because you're never more bewildered and exhausted than you are in the immediate aftermath of childbirth, let's just be honest. And you need all kinds of energy to take on an institution, don't you? I mean, you can't do it.
Definitely. And I don't think you really know what way is up for quite a long time. So you don't really know whether or not what you've experienced has been bad care, good care. It's incredibly painful sometimes. You don't know whether or not that's a pain that could have been alleviated. There are so many things that go into it. I was unaware that there was a 12-month deadline as well, so I think that is definitely worth highlighting in itself. We'll talk more about your fantastic entrance to the Proud as a Peacock Wicks Award, £250 coming somebody's way just before 4 o'clock this afternoon. And we're also going to talk about why oversharing at work might help you get ahead. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wicks, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Jeff Norcott on Times Radio.
I'm Jeff Norcott, and every Friday night I'm joined by some of my comedy friends to find the funny in the week's news, as well as a review of all the latest from Westminster, Washington and beyond. We're pulling out all the stops with our showbiz contacts. There's cultural conversation from best-selling authors and business leaders, plus hard recommendations and show-stopping music to kickstart your weekend. All that and more on Friday Night with Norcott.
Jeff Norcott, tomorrow night from 7 on Times Radio.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
Summer is calling.
Dear Tesco Mobile Club Card customer, we have some important news to share regarding your contract. It's not changing. Because with Club Card prices, your price stays frozen. So, unlike with some other networks, you'll have one less surprise bill to worry about. Yours helpfully, Tesco Mobile.
It pays to be connected. P.S. Terms at tescomobile.com/frozen.
Tesco Finest, Alderwood Smoked Bacon. The foundation for the ultimate bacon butty. It's why only the finest bacon is traditionally hand-cured with Cornish sea salt, delicately smoked over alderwood, and matured for at least 19 days. Layer it between slices of crusty bread and savour its richer flavour. All you have to think about is brown sauce or red. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
The UK on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
In the Wix Proud as a Peacock Awards segment, you look surprised, but you should be used to it by now. It's Thursday,
Jane.
Oh,
I know. It's Proud as a Peacock
It is Proud as a Peacock Day. The contenders are many and various. Tracy from Cambridgeshire.
Yeah, come on in, Tracy. Can I nominate my husband for the Proud as a Peacock Award this week? He's had 13 operations on his head and ears to remove tiny tumours and some diseased bone at the base of his skull. He now wears a bone-anchored hearing aid on the side of his head. And despite anoxic brain damage during an op, which has caused memory loss, he now has to work from home, but he carries on regardless. His doctor is amazed at his coping strategies, his resilience and his lack of self-pity. He is amazing, says Tracy. He sounds amazing, actually. And I'm so proud of how he just gets on with things.
And one from Tony. So proud of our grandson, Jim. He's been helping a local homeless charity, Liverpool in Arms, by giving his time in Liverpool City Centre every Monday evening to help feed homeless people. From the age of 8 to the present, he's now coming up to 14. Well, what an absolute star.
That's brilliant.
Both of you go into the mix, as does Lindsay, who wanted to nominate her 79-year-old mum, Janice. Last year, my wonderful dad died after a devastating battle with dementia. It was brutal in its swiftness and cruelty. Mum cared for him every single day, right up until his final breath. And I know that she's been there for your sister as well, too. I'm eternally proud of her strength and resilience. All of those go into the pot. We are 0333 003 2353, Jane and Fee at times.radio. Now, picture this. You're at after-work drinks in a pub function room packed with colleagues. Everybody's in high spirits. You're working the room. Your chat skills are on top form and you're even confident enough to hold court with the boss. Then the next day hits. What felt like a social win turns into a cringe-worthy flashback. You're remembering with growing horror that you shared something far too personal with somebody you barely know from work. God, this person was just in the room with me. Well, Harvard professor and behavioural scientist Leslie John found that 85% of employees were more drawn to colleagues who kept painfully transparent diaries, and the hesitancy to be vulnerable is the reason young people are struggling to find love. Well, let's talk about this with Lucy Beresford, behavioural psychologist. Lucy, gosh, what a mess we're in. I don't really understand this. I mean, being more transparent and honest is a good thing, but oversharing at work, that comes with all kinds of klaxons going off, doesn't it?
Well, yes, I was thinking that when you were revealing quite how much you liked the accent of the previous guest, that actually there was some rather beautiful oversharing there. But for many of us, that only made us warm to you even more. So the risk is that people will reject you or will think that they have seen a side of you that they're not interested in. But the upside in the workplace, but also in your romantic relationships, is that there is that sense of authenticity and people are much more drawn to people who feel human, who they can relate to and who they feel might relate to them back.
Sure. I think the important thing here to me is that we're talking about two completely different areas of our life, aren't we? And I completely get that in order to properly fall in love, you have to be able to show your vulnerable side and see your potential partner's vulnerable side. But I would have thought that the exact opposite is helpful, especially to young people in the workplace, where it could actually be quite dangerous to show too much of yourself.
Well, if I could break that down a bit, in fact, I think even in intimate relationships, it's sometimes too much to give away too much information. There was a report out only last week from Ashley Madison, the discretion-led dating website, and they found that Generation Z in particular want to keep their relationships much more private. They don't want to go on social media and tell everybody what they're doing and who they're doing it with. But actually, in the old days, that, or let's say in the last 10 years, that's what a lot of people have been doing. So they've almost forgotten how to be private, that actually the latest luxury is privacy in your relationships. But you're right, in intimate relationships, it would be way more beneficial to set your boundaries, to be upfront about what your needs are, what your preferences are. And we don't do that, which is how we end up running into situations where our partner doesn't meet our needs. They're not communicating consistently, or they're not meeting the fantasy that we had when we first met them. But in the workplace, and I think this is going to start to become increasingly important the more that AI encroaches in the workplace, we are going to value human authenticity way more than we ever did before. So in the old days, we might have thought, oh, I better not say that. I can't reveal that to my client in terms of the customer or consumer experience. Actually, going forward, people are going to want to know much more about you, about your company, about the services you offer from a human point of view in a more vulnerable way than anything that could be created by, let's say, AI slop that's out there.
Yep. So I completely understand the draw of that authenticity. I suppose what I don't understand in this survey is why 85% of employees who talked to this Harvard professor said that they were more drawn to colleagues who were incredibly kind of, you know, oversharing and transparent towards them, because I don't know. It's, there's a point at which HR needs to get involved sometimes with the painfully transparent person who's giving of themselves too much. I don't understand why we would be very, very drawn to that in an office setting.
Yes, there's a reason why there are cubicles and offices with doors that close in workplaces, I often feel, is that there is a time and a place to share yourself and to share your vulnerability. But at the same time, human beings are very imitative creatures. We learn about the world and our place in the world by monitoring the facial cues, the expressions, the body language, the way that people talk from looking at other people. It's how we learn how to function in the world. And therefore, if you're in an environment where someone is easier to read and they're making it easier for them to be read because they're being much more upfront about what they tell you, somehow you've got a window into that person, and that makes people feel a bit safer. They feel a bit more like they know what's going on. They're not having to second guess this person. So for sure, there's, for every person that overshares, and this would be the case in intimate relationships as well, certainly don't give away all your ammunition when you're on your first date. But for every person who does do that, there's someone who's maybe a little bit more carefully calibrated about what they reveal, but it just makes them end up coming across as more human.
Sure.
And we really connect with that.
Lucy, lovely stuff. Thank you very much indeed for unpacking that for us. Behavioural psychologist Lucy Beresford. I think Jane and I would be very interested in hearing from all of you on this. Do you like an oversharer? And do you like a transparent boss? I'd like some of them to be invisible.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Good afternoon. 3 o'clock, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover with you for another hour here on Times Radio. And in that hour, can the government really halve homelessness? We'll talk to the big issue founder, Lord Bird. Can sports teams really buy success? Vassilos Alexander will tell us about some surprising new stats. And our big interview after 3:30 is with the online safety campaigner, Ian Russell, who is part of a new documentary about his daughter, Molly. It's called Molly versus the Machines. First, the news at 3, Eliza Phillips.
Thank you. Good afternoon. A bill to legalise assisted dying in England and Wales is likely to fail in the House of Lords. The government's not expected to grant extra time for debate before the current session of Parliament ends. That means it's extremely unlikely to pass before the King's Speech in May. Dr. Gordon MacDonald is CEO of Care Not Killing.
People can live for years. I mean, I got a letter the other day from somebody who's lived for 25 years, having been given a 6 months prognosis. So I think that shows why it's so complicated. And that's why the Lords has been, you know, taking their time, looking at this in detail, scrutinising it properly, and as they should do so.
Meanwhile, Jersey has voted to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults. It's the second of the British Isles to do so after the Isle of Man. The vote was 32 in favour and 16 against. Small boat arrivals rose by 13% compared to the previous year. That's what new figures show. 41,472 people arrived by this illegal route. 101,000 claimed asylum last year. That's 4% drop from 2024. And just over 30,000 asylum seekers were being housed temporarily in UK hotels at the end of 2025, the lowest level for 18 months. Madeline Sumption is director of the Migration Observatory.
There is a lot of stuff actually that France could do if they were really committed to ending or at least significantly reducing the small boats phenomenon, both on the enforcement side, but also accepting people back. I mean, in theory, this is not going to happen, but in theory, if France was willing to take back everyone who crossed the channel, that business model would disappear. People would divert to other routes. Some people would find, you know, would move back to lorries, which are less likely to be detected when they arrive.
Spain will be able to veto the entry of British travellers to Gibraltar and refuse residency permits on security grounds under a post-Brexit treaty. The agreement, published earlier, ends almost a decade of limbo for the British Overseas Territory since the referendum result. Police and teachers are braced for school wars being whipped up on social media, including teenagers being encouraged to bring knives to class. The Met Police have begun an operation in response to social media posts dividing schools into teams and urging them to be violent. Laura Trott is the Shadow Education Secretary. She told Times Radio the government needs to step up.
They said they were going to do a urgent consultation on what they were going to do about social media. That was weeks ago. It still hasn't appeared. But we have a vote in a couple of weeks on the 9th of March, which is straight up and down, banning children from social media. Today's issues that we've heard about from schools with police and knives is just another example of why this is so necessary.
And Jeremy Corbyn is to become the leader of your party. He emerged victorious from the long power struggles at the New Socialist Group. The former Labour leader beat Zara Sultana, the Coventry South MP, in the battle for the role. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
It's Jane and Fee with you until 4 o'clock on Times Radio this afternoon. Plenty to pack into this hour. We will be doing sport with Vassos Alexander. After 3.30, Ian Russell joins us to talk about a remarkable film called Money versus the Machines, which details so much of what happened to his 14-year-old daughter before she took her own life. And we completely understand. It's an incredibly sinister, dark and depressing subject. But Ian has done a remarkable thing in trying to turn their family tragedy into something that can illuminate all of our futures. And he really is a remarkable man. This is a really brilliant film. We will talk about all the things that might lie in our futures, which might be just a little bit more positive than where we are in our present at the moment. And in fact, two fascinating stories have emerged just today. One about Instagram, owned by Meta, which has finally agreed, and this is what so many people like Ian have been campaigning for parents to be notified if their children are watching incredibly harmful content. Now, this would only happen if you've all signed up to the Teen Accounts Experience. But obviously, if you're paying for the phone, then you can ask your kids to sign up to that experience with you. And then if dire content is being sent to them and they are watching it, you will be alerted yourself to that happening. There's also an extraordinary thing that's been happening in London via social media, where schools have been encouraged, pupils of schools have been encouraged to fight against each other. And these are postings on TikTok, which are actually asking school pupils to basically form gangs to fight other pupils from other schools, to bring weapons with them, to go to certain places to take part in these events. And the Metropolitan Police are having a really, really hard time trying to track this social media campaign because they haven't got access to the phones. So we will talk to Ian about loads of stuff after 3.30. And what happens just before 4 o'clock, Jane?
Proud as a Peacock Thursday, and we are delighted to hear from you every week. I know a lot of people just like to hear this kind of burst of positivity, because we ask you on a Thursday to tell us why you're feeling as proud as a peacock. It can be something you've achieved. It can be somebody in your family or your friendship circle who's just delighted you. And just let us know. You could be in with a chance of winning a £250 Wix voucher. You can take part on the WhatsApp. It's 0333 003 2353. Or you can email us, janeandfee@times.radio.
We're going to start with something completely different, tackling homelessness. £50 million will be pumped into community organisations and local authorities as the government tries to meet its target of halving homelessness figures. Housing Minister Alison McGovern spoke to Times Radio Breakfast this morning.
After 14 years of failure on this front, I think it's going to take more than a year of Labour government to turn it around. We've got significant forces, meaning that homelessness is more likely. We've not got enough homes, we know that, and people have really struggled with incomes, but that's why our strategy today focuses our efforts on making sure that we deal with the worst symptoms of the crisis, long-term rough sleeping, and also the overuse of bed and breakfast accommodation, particularly for children, which I think, you know, people can see the rough sleeping all around us. I think a lot of people would be really shocked by children being in B&Bs as we head towards Christmas.
Well, that's Alison McGovern. This comes after calls from housing leaders for the government to use empty homes to get people out of temporary accommodation. Lord Bird, John Bird, is one of the signatories of the letter and also the co-founder of The Big Issue. John Bird, it's always lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for coming on our programme. What would you do with that amount of money? Where would you start?
Oh, well, God, that's the real problem, because in my opinion, what you've got is you've got £3.55 billion, which the government says that it's putting into homelessness, and then you've got £50 billion. And you have to think yourself, well, what can you do with £50 billion? There's a further figure of £15 billion, which is going to go by to local authorities so that they can get smart about how you prevent people from staying on the streets and also prevent people from ending up on the streets. So you're talking about very, very small bits of money, and yet the government is spending supposedly £3.5 billion on the problem of people not having their homes. So
right. Hang on a second, John. Let's just get our billions and our millions clear. So it's £50 million that the government is talking about today out of a total budget of, as you say, £3.5 billion. Yes?
Yes? Yes, I'm saying that.
Yeah.
I'm saying that you've got £50 million, you've got £3.5 billion, and you've got £15 billion. And what I'm saying is that these are very, very small amounts of money that may just touch, you know, you may just be able to change the look of homelessness, rough sleeping, etc. But it's not going to really get deep down, because the real problem that we're having is that we continue to produce people socially who have no money and who come from the inheritance of poverty. And because they come from the inheritance of poverty, from the moment they're born, they're always stuck in this strange world of having poverty pass on to the next generation and the generation after that. I don't want to sound too much like some kind of Jeremiah, but until the government stops and says, hang on, when are we going to turn the tap off? And I've never heard a government in the 35 years of The Big Issue, apart from, say, at a conference time, that they're going to turn the tap off and actually prevent people falling into homelessness. I never see it. So when I see this large amount of money that they're going to spend on homelessness, £3.5 billion, I say, well, you're not going to get anywhere with 50, and you're certainly not going to get anywhere with £15 million spent on avoiding homelessness and rough sleeping.
Right. And I completely hear your point about turning the tap off. I mean, that is a mighty ambition for a government to have. And you're right. We hear that kind of expansive rhetoric around the time of an election. But I suppose any government would say, well, actually, all of the things that we're doing around social care, around education, around poverty, around food poverty, around homelessness, those are all part of the liquid that goes into that tap. You know, just to have one great big slogan, one great big aim would never be possible anyway, would it?
Well, just after the Second World War, when we had no money and we were living off the American taxpayer, we invented the welfare state, which has done a remarkable job to get an enormous amount of people out of poverty, but unfortunately also leaving people behind. So it's all about what is a government? Is a government simply a mechanism for patching up a system that is not quite working and has never quite worked? Or is it stepping back and saying, let's be brave, let's take on the fact that we have to aim for the impossible, as Nye Bevin said when he invented the NHS. So what I'm saying is that we've always got governments. We've had 35 years since the creation of the big issue. And here I am saying the same bloody things that I was saying 35 years ago. So I'm saying, when are we going to have a government that is mature and says we are now going to make seismic changes? And the first thing we've got to do is recognise that whatever we're doing doesn't work. Mm.
So much of this doesn't make sense and doesn't appear logical to people, John. So I wonder whether you can help us out just with this empty homes thing. How have we ended up in a situation where there are over a million empty homes in England, whilst 1.3 million people are on waiting lists for social housing?
Well, that once again. I mean, we have to say that one of the most optimistic things that we came across in the early days of the big issue was the Empty Home Alliance, you know, Empty Housing Alliance. And unfortunately, that petered out much later. So you return to the problems of having empty, you know, places above shops that could have been utilised for flats for people to live in, voids where you've got, I'm not sure of the figures, so I won't quote them, voids of the amount of social housing that is out of the housing stock because it is rubbished, is broken. And one of the things that the empty homes strategy, the new empty homes strategy is about ring fencing the money that the government gives to local authorities so that money does go into bringing houses back into the housing stock and getting rid of void properties. That is a tremendous problem. But then, of course, we have the problem of the vast amount of people who have made money in the last 20, 30, 40 years of owning secondary properties. And these properties, on occasions, are left empty. And we've had, you know, the influx of oligarchs coming into our big cities, buying up property, buying up land, and then the properties left empty. Places like Mayfair are full of empty properties, and in my opinion, we should be taking them over.
Mm. Do you think that our projections might be wrong as well about how many people will find themselves without homes in the next 10, 20 years? There is definitely a worsening situation on the horizon in terms of low-paid jobs because of an AI sweep. And we're talking about student loans today as well. And surely we should worry that a whole new generation falls into homelessness because they can't afford the rent, they can't find jobs, there really isn't anything for them to fall back on.
Yes, and this is where, unfortunately, we have to go back once again to the big, big change that came over Britain and its housing stock, which was in the Second World War, and the fact that after the Second World War, an enormous effort was put into building new homes. And unless we take that same almost draconian measure of taking over land, using that land to build new houses, unless we have a government that unfortunately Mr. Starmer's government, the way it was introduced before it came in, was you got that impression, oh, wow, they're going to try and do what Tony Blair had a go at and what they'd achieved after the Second World War. But unfortunately, we don't have that same tenacity, that same breadth of vision. And unless we have that same breadth of vision, we're not going anywhere.
Do you know what reforms social housing policy looks like?
I've kind of got bits here and there. I do talk to people in reform because, you know, everybody tells, all the pundits tell me they're coming our way. There is very little sign, in my opinion, that the reform will be able to do what most of the other governments since the Second World War have not managed to do. And therefore, you know, I can't pass comment, but I would love to think that that any government that came in came in as a radical revolutionary government. I don't mean, you know, dispossessing the rich, but I mean taking over properties that are empty. Let's be brave and not let properties that are owned by companies and all that, and by wealthy individuals, let's be brave to do that. And let's be brave on making sure that local authorities have the resources and use those resources correctly and take people on to work, you know, building jobs and all that. And let's get rid of the voids. The voids are the worst possible thing.
Good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. That's Lord Bird, John Bird, who is the co-founder of The Big Issue.
Don't forget, of course, it is the Gorton and Denton by-election taking place right now. Coverage overnight here on Times Radio. Tom Noonan and Daryl Morris will keep you company. Daryl is in the constituency, so you can hear live reports and you'll get all the action as it unfolds. We are told, of course, that it's going to be make or break, potentially, this by-election. Also coverage, of course, on Times Radio Breakfast tomorrow. Right, coming up, what are we doing next? It's sport with Vassos Alexander. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit your local Wix store.
The Gorton and Denton by-election on Times Radio.
It's a by-election that could define the premiership of Keir Starmer. And this evening, I'll be presenting a special overnight programme bringing you all the build-up to the results of the Gorton and Denton by-election, including on-location reaction from Daryl Morris, who'll be at the count in Manchester.
Then I'll be bringing you Times Radio Breakfast with Chloe Tilley in London. I'm Callum MacDonald, and I'll be live from the Stockport Road, soaking up the mood of locals and hearing from all the political parties in what is shaping up to be a very close race.
The Gorton and Denton by-election on Times Radio.
Experience every rhythm of life in Antalya, Turkey.
Say yes to bagging a great value deal in the TUI sale with a MyTUI account. Say yes to flexible payment options. Say yes to free kids' places. Fly from London Gatwick to over 50 destinations, including Turkey, Mexico, and Cyprus. With so many holiday options to choose from, you pick it, we sort it. TUI, Atoll and app to protect it. Booking T's and C's apply, selected departures, minimum spend apply, subject to availability. See website for details.
Find your calm on golden sand. Dive into blue, feel grand. Savor the flavors as day turns to night. Dance till the morning light. Live every rhythm of life in one single vacation in Antalya. Go Turkey.
My dad is more than just a dad. My dad provides life-changing support to those affected by disaster and conflict, helping people in crisis, whoever and wherever they are. Through the gift that he left in his will to the British Red Cross, my dad still makes a difference to the world, even though he's no longer with us. You can make a difference too. Please go online and search Red Cross Wills and consider leaving a gift in your will to the British Red Cross.
Listen to Times Radio on your smart speaker. Just say, play Times Radio.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens, helping create kitchens to feel proud of. From expert design consultants who'll measure your space and bring your vision to life on a 3D plan, through to a professional installation service. Learn more at wix.co.uk.
big guest this afternoon is Molly Russell's father, Ian Russell, who has made a really powerful documentary about social media and AI and its their impacts on his daughter, Molly. Now, every day at around that time, you will hear an in-depth interview with a great guest. But if you do miss it, you can catch up with it on our podcast Off Air with Jane and Fee, which comes your way Monday to Thursday at around 6. I mean, it's just, I don't know how to describe Off Air, really. It's a kind of rumbling on conversation that started in 2017, if I'm honest, and still hasn't ever come anywhere close to a conclusion, but it involves you as well, and we love hearing from you. We had so many brilliant emails just in the last 24 hours, including some crackers about elderly cats and whether or not it's wise to go abroad when you have a cat of a certain vintage and you leave them with cat sitters or just a friend. Anyway, honestly, you've been brilliant in terms of Off Air, and we love your emails. It's janeandfee@times.radio if you want to ping one in. Yesterday, I talked to the best-selling novelist Ellie Griffiths. She was talking to me about her new book, The Killing Time. It's the second instalment in her Ali Dawson time-travelling mystery series. And I asked Ellie straight out, have you lived before?
Ali moves in the first book. She moves to this house, which is in the East End. And I wanted that to be really central to all the books, really. And as the books go on, you're going to find out a bit more about all her neighbours. Yes, but her neighbour, I think two doors on, Irene Goldman, says that her family have lived there for generations. Yeah. So when the door opens, it's Irene's great-great-grandmother standing there with a shawl round her shoulders.
Oh, getting all quite shivery. So when we do see people that we think we know, it might simply be that in a previous life we've met their great-great-great-granddad.
It could be, and I think Joan says that at one point in the book, that these could be time travellers all around us. Who knows?
Have you lived before?
I don't know that I have, really. I don't have... I know some people do have sort of strong past life memories. I don't really. I think I'm a new soul, like Dina in the book.
A new soul. I wonder if Vassos is. I suspect he is one. You can download that and many other episodes wherever you get your podcasts from. Well, what do you think? Have you lived before?
I suspect I'm a new soul. What about you?
No, I don't think this is the first time around for me. Yeah. Although I do worry, how on earth did I earn my living before radio was invented? I dread to think what I was doing. Let's not go there. Now, you join us Monday to Thursday at about this time to talk sport. And today it is money and football. And the question is, can money ever really buy you success? Well, if you're reading the Times sports pages, the answer is a bit mixed. Man United had the highest net spend in the world over the last 5 years, a cool £692 million. Now, earlier on, I made a rookie error, and perhaps an error not untypical of someone who doesn't support Manchester United. I said they hadn't won anything in that time. They have, but nothing major, Vassos.
No, and their Premier League form has been pretty average.
Yes.
The past month excepted. Yes, they've won the FA Cup. Yes, they've won the League Cup. So this is Martin Ziegler's piece, which was published online at 10 o'clock this morning. It's absolutely fascinating. So, you know, 692, the most net spend on players in the world. And, you know, and the Manchester United fans moaning about, you know, the owners. Well, the owners have really, you know, dug deep. Nearly 700, that's nearly three quarters of £1 billion net spend. Second is Chelsea, third is Arsenal. And the gap is widening between the Premier League and everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, when you say net spend in terms of clubs, some clubs have spent more money, but they've sold more players at higher prices.
Yeah, so Chelsea and Manchester City made the most from selling players. And Manchester United would be the first to admit that that hasn't gone well for them lately. In fact, they still own some players and are paying the wages of those players who are currently out on loan. I've got a list here. I mean, this is Sir Jim Ratcliffe about this time last year gave a big interview, and he's saying, look, we have to make all these redundancies. We have to, you know, sack the dinner ladies. We have to say you have to have it signed off if you want to buy a book of stamps, all of this, because, you know, this is the money that we're hemorrhaging. So, for example, these are the examples that he gave.
Yeah.
So Jadon Sancho, who Manchester United bought for £75 million. He's been a Manchester United player since 2021. He's currently on loan at Aston Villa, before that at Chelsea, before that back at Dortmund, where they bought him from. Onana, the goalkeeper, £50 million. He's currently on loan in Turkey. And Manchester United will be paying a significant part of these players' wages, because there's no way Trabzonspor can afford to pay Onana what Manchester United were paying. And he's going to say, well, this is what I earn. Mm. So, you know, sort it out between you. Rasmus Højlund, he's on loan at Napoli, £72 million they spent on him. And Antony, who has now made his loan move to Real Betis permanent for, I think, about 20 million quid. He was bought for 81 million pounds. This is why, I know, right? This is why their net spend is so high.
Yeah, I mean, what is it a failure of? The scouting system? I mean, it's also high tech these days, isn't it? I mean, they use stats, they watch videos. When they hire, I mean, you'd imagine they really know what they're doing.
You would like to think so. I always wonder why so much business, so much hundreds of millions of pounds worth of business is done on transfer deadline day this year accepted. Because you'd think you'd want to get your ducks in a row before you spend 80 million pounds on a player. But so frequently these things get sort of done, rushed through faxing or emailing, whatever it is they do these days, you know, the Premier League coming up to the 11 o'clock deadline. And I find it extraordinary that teams can get their recruitment so wrong. It seems, because Manchester United fans will be texting in, it seems like they might have started to turn that corner, but only like in the past month. There's a player called Sesko who's been coming off the bench and scoring quite a lot for Manchester United, including the winner at Everton this week. And 3 weeks ago, everyone was saying, well, there's another dud, but he's just started to look all right now, so maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's bizarre, isn't it? I did actually see the last bit of that game, the Everton-Manchester United one, and I mean, Manchester United, well, it wasn't the most thrilling encounter, I must be honest. He was good, and he did, as we say, make an impact off the bench. But it's the change of manager at Manchester United, isn't it? The caretaker, Michael Carrick is...
Suddenly they're playing like Manchester United. I think of Manchester United as that sort of that Fergie team in the 90s, you know, fast, attacking, aggressive, great football. And they seem to sort of be reverting to that after a few years of Ruben Amorim saying, look, this is the system we play. Buying players, to be fair, that seemed to fit that system on paper, but then not looking like they did at all.
Yeah. You mentioned that gulf, and it's a, more than a chasm. It's a, what's bigger than a chasm and a gulf? An ocean?
Let's go canyon.
I like the Grand Canyon. Yeah, there is a canyon. Have a listen to this stat. I mean, I don't know where Martin picked this one out, but so the Premier League clubs earned £1.3 billion more in TV revenue over the past 10 years, right? And that is the same increase as the rest of the leagues in Europe combined.
Goodness.
And it's going to get better, because the next deal is in a couple of years' time and it's going to be bigger for the Premier League. I mean, but do you remember after the World Cup in 1990? I think David Platt, who was the standout star, he was an Aston Villa player for England. He scored that wonderful last minute goal against Belgium that saved us the penalty shootout. He then went to Italy, I want to say Napoli, for £5.5 million, which at the time, you know, here we were thinking, how can we possibly compete with Serie A if they're going to be spending £5.5 million on our best players? And suddenly, you know, in the last 30 years, that's completely turned around and the Premier League is the powerhouse. And to be honest, you know, you mentioned the game on Monday night. We're not really reaping the benefits of that.
Well, not every
game. Some games are wonderful.
Yes.
But then you have the odd absolute shocker like Monday night. Which
I'd call it workaday.
Oh, it was worse than workaday.
Okay, worse than workaday. Right. Now, you must have a sporting weekend ahead. Are you playing golf?
No, I'm not playing golf. I'm running. And I am going to Fulham. Haven't played at home for a while, but they are playing Tottenham at home. And my son, bless him, a 19 years old, comes back from university to watch, to sit next to me at Fulham,
like he has done
since he's 4 years old. Yeah. And I'm sat there, and
he's been at university since he was four. I mean, he's a prodigy, this kid.
Yes,
that is a very slow learner.
So clever, Matthew. But I'm so happy he's sat next to me, and we've been doing this for 15 years. And you know, he comes back, and we will hope that Spurs don't turn a corner under their new manager.
No, I wouldn't worry. I think you'll be fine. Right, you'll have to give us a match update on Monday. We'll look forward to it.
I do, thank you.
Do you know what? My son went to see Fulham, Liverpool. It was the first time he went to see Fulham a couple of months ago. And he came back and said, Mum, it's so posh. We live in Dalston.
we played Peterborough in the Cup a few seasons ago, and Matthew went, and the stadium announcer, Peterborough's nickname is the Posh. So the stadium announcer goes, please welcome onto the pitch, the Posh, and the even posher.
Oh, that's good.
That'll be very good.
Very good indeed. Yeah. Right. Thank you very much, Vassos. And thank you to all of our lovely Proud as a Peacock nominees today. Lynn says, I'm proud as a peacock after a rubbish start to the year, including being very poorly and then losing my mum. I'm very proud that this week I have finally qualified as a guide leader. It's been very hard work, but it's so fulfilling being a positive part of girls' lives, and I absolutely love it. You go into the mix. And Glyn, as ever, it's always a good day when Glyn is listening.
He's been very helpful.
Very tangential. I can never say that. Do you want to have a go?
Tangential.
Thank you. To this homelessness interview. But a fact I learnt the other day that informs any discussion focused on funding and budgets where millions and billions are bandied about. 1 million minutes ago was December 2024, whereas 1 billion minutes ago was first century Roman Britain. Isn't that good?
What?
Yes. Yeah. The difference between a million and a billion is way, way more vast than just the change in the consonant would suggest.
So when someone is a billionaire,
they're mega, 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 mega rich.
I mean, the way to think about it is a million seconds is about 10 days, 11 days, and a billion seconds is 32 years.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Well, thank you both. It's Times Radio. It's just after...
Take a deep breath and
I think the whole nation now needs a deep breath. Our interview today is with Ian Russell, who campaigns to make children and young people safer online. And his story and that of his daughter is told in the new documentary, Molly versus the Machine. Machines, I apologise. Right. Times Radio, 3:32. Here are the headlines. Eliza Phillips.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's almost certain the assisted dying bill for England and Wales will not become law. It has to get through before the end of the parliamentary session in May, but it's understood the government's not setting aside any more time to debate hundreds of amendments that have been put forward. Well, Dame Esther Ranson has been campaigning for the bill and says she's saddened by its demise.
Fortunately, I have the funds to go to Zurich and get Dignitas to help me because Swiss law allows that. But I can't take my family with me. I can't allow them to know when I'm going because if I do, under the current criminal law, they will be investigated by the police, suspected of murdering me, which is the last thing they need when they're facing bereavement anyway.
Meanwhile, Jersey's Parliament has given final approval to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults who live on the island. Spain will be able to veto the entry of British travellers to Gibraltar and refuse residency permits on security grounds under a post-Brexit treaty. The agreement published earlier ends almost a decade of limbo for the British overseas territory since the referendum result. Ian Huntley is in life-threatening condition after a prison attack. The 52-year-old killed schoolgirls Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman in 2002. He was found in a pool of blood in his cell in HMP Frankland earlier. And for the first time, parents will get an alert if their child's searching harmful material on Instagram. Mums and dads can use the child supervision tools to get notifications from the social media site from next week, rather than having to block searches. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Ever wondered what it's like to glide through the emerald waters of Ha Long Bay? Or if homegrown lemons really taste sweeter in the sun-soaked orchards of Sicily? Ever wondered how it feels to share a golden beach with inquisitive penguins? Or explore the world knowing every detail has been expertly taken care of? With over 100 tours worldwide, including signature for smaller groups and enhanced experiences, wonder no more. Book today with Riviera Travel, recommended by Which for 14 years. APTA and Atoll protected.
The same band, the same chorus, different headphones. The Samsung Galaxy Buds 4 Pro. Pre-order today from Samsung.com and try superior sound for 100 days. Love it or your money back. The Samsung Galaxy Buds 4 Pro. Your sound, your way. Buy before the 30th of April. Register with Samsung within 30 days. T's and C's apply.
Jane Garvey and Feig Lover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens. Choose from over 80 kitchen styles. Whether it's your first home or your forever home, find your dream kitchen at Wix. Prices start from under £3,000. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
It's 25 minutes to four. Few parents have done more to try and make the world of tech safer for our children than Ian Russell, and he's done it from the saddest of places, because his daughter Molly took her own life when she was just 14 after viewing content that encouraged her self-harm and took her down a path of no return. Now, in his film Molly versus the Machines, which you can see on Channel 4 tonight, he turns the tables on the technology, and the film asks AI, and of course that's tech built by the algorithms and imagery and scraping the content, all of that contributed to his daughter's death. He asks that AI to explain Molly's life to us. It is chilling and it is massively powerful. Ian, it's lovely to see you in the studio. Thank you very much indeed for coming in.
Good to see you.
We talk about this a lot on the programme. Both Jane and I have young adults and children ourselves. I have never seen anything as powerful as the opening to your film, though. So I would love you, in your own words, to explain exactly what I've tried to about what the AI is doing here.
That's extraordinary to hear, because when you work on a project, you get so close to it, you don't quite know how effective it might be anymore. The film begins with that asking an AI computer to speak in the voice of Silicon Valley. And it's something that the director, Mark Silver, struggled with. The people like me can be interviewed and we can speak on screen. But how do you represent this invisible other force, which is not just affecting children like Molly, but affecting all of us in our everyday life and all of our nations as well? How do you represent something that is intangible and invisible and completely different from anything we've really come across before? And we had long discussions. It's Mark's film, but we had long discussions talking about, should we have a famous voice do the voiceover? Who should that famous voice be? And then Mark was, someone suggested, have you seen this clip? And I think it was something like AI explaining something from the point of view of the devil or something. So he started to play around with an AI engine. And it wasn't long before he put in, from the point of view of Silicon Valley, tell me the story of Molly Russell and her death. And the alarming thing was these AIs came up with bits of script that I don't think any of us would have dared write by ourselves, because we would have thought it would have been too strong, too much hyperbole, not believable. But the AI itself didn't have any of those bashfulnesses, if that's a word, and wrote these extraordinarily chilling, haunting, sinister. It's almost mechanical, isn't it? That opening to the film, which basically sets the scene for the next 80 yeah. minutes of the film.
I mean, what's so chilling, Ian, is that you feel that the AI knows your daughter. we know that the AI never knew your daughter, but also it is trying to be human in its response, but it's not human, and it doesn't say what any real life person would say when asked a question about Molly, and knowing that you're in the room, which is, I'm so sorry about what happened to your child. It can't do that because it's not our friend.
No. I think we're at a crossroads here. We're at a crossroads where the technologies like social media that a coroner concluded contributed in a more than minimal way to Molly's death are still there. And Molly died now more than 8 years ago, and we haven't learned enough lessons. Molly Rose Foundation, the charity we set up in her name, has done research that shows the sort of content that we know Molly saw in the last 6 months of her life and contributed to her death is still available online. It's almost as easy to get to. One extra click it might be to get to. And worse than the fact that it's available on social media platforms, it's still being algorithmically recommended to users. If you dip your toe for whatever reason, if you hover and just pause on a nihilistic, bleak, black and white post that might mention self-harm or suicide, you're likely to get more of that. And the more you look at them, the more you're going to get. That mechanism that contributed to Molly's death is still alive and well, if I can put it that way, on social media. And yet we've got these new technologies, these new things like AI that aren't coming down the tracks. They're well and truly here with us. And we should have learned lessons about social media and applied it to social media. We haven't even done that yet. We need to be ahead of the game. And we haven't learned those lessons, and we're not applying enough foresight to what's coming towards us.
Another thing that we see in the film is a recreation, I mean, almost in real time, of the evidence that was presented at Molly's inquest. And that is using real actors to really bring all of that detail to the fore. And I was flabbergasted by exactly what you've just said, how much you knew at the time that actually that could have also been, you know, God forbid, an inquest that was held last month. You know, we have not travelled very far in that time at all, but you've been knocking on all the right doors. You've been asking all of the right questions. What is that obstinacy about? Is it money?
I think the glittering new world that technology seemed to promise was just accepted without question. It's exciting. It's new. And there's always something fresh and almost shocking about new things. And also, of course, there are huge financial prizes that come with it, because some of the biggest and most profitable companies on the planet are tech companies. So probably each of us as individuals and most nations on the planet were hoodwinked. And we only saw the good side that tech does. And tech, we should also remember, tech does good. We live in a technical world. That isn't going to change. And it brings with it huge amounts of benefits. And we just saw that. And we didn't stop to think about anything that might come with those benefits that wasn't so good. We didn't stop to think how people might misuse the platforms, and how algorithms that were written to promote engagement so that a platform made more money and increased its profits could be very harmful to the people that were using it.
But surely the truth, Ian, is that if you took away all of that very sinister content and, you know, websites that are devoted to how to get anorexia, how to self-harm, all of that kind of stuff, they can't possibly be making as much money as a website selling fantastic skinny tops and nice trousers. Why would one thing be profitable against another?
It seems really counterintuitive, I think. And it's taken me so long to sort of get to grips with this. And I think if you strip it back to how the platform's algorithms are designed, they're designed by people to do a job for Meta, if you're talking about Instagram, and other platforms, of course, as well. But they're designed to keep people on that platform because that's how they make money. Because when someone's on the platform, you can be receiving adverts from that platform. Those adverts make the platform money. When you're on a platform, your data is being mined, and the profiling that goes on of you as an individual by that platform is also used to make money, because they can target adverts and sell adverts for a greater fee if they're selling targeted adverts to someone.
Okay. You also feature some of Molly's friends in the film who are just, gosh, how lovely they all are.
They're the best thing in it.
Oh, my goodness. They are amazing. And obviously, they've got a clarity of vision, haven't they? And they say such interesting things. One of them says, we didn't realise, but we were just living in a world that was completely about competition. And that's what the internet had created. And also, they talk about the fact that they just weren't ever free. And that is a truth for all of us now, isn't it?
It is. But I think the world is waking up. And if the best thing about Molly's friends is that wonderful connection they had to her, which is so obvious when you see them speaking, and the warmth and love that they still have for Molly. And the fact that they're the closest thing that we've got to being able to speak to Molly if she was in her early 20s now. And you can see how they really do quite understand this world in a way that perhaps people of my generation and parents who didn't grow up with digital technology don't. And I think it might be quite daunting, but it's not as frightening or hard as it might seem to begin to become aware of how the digital world is. I use the phrase mugging us off. If I go into schools and do a talk, I only need to say this whole thing about a platform needing you to be on their product in order to make money. Why are the little red notification circles on your smartphone? Why are they red? I'm told that's because a psychologist many years ago said it's ever so slightly harder to ignore something that's red. If it was a little green circle, you might come back to it later. You want to get rid of that red circle, so you go into the platform. When you're in the platform, why is there infinite scroll? Because you're there longer. Why are there autoplay videos? Because you're there longer. And if you point that out to 11 and 13-year-olds in classrooms today, they get it instantly. And if you use the phrase, be aware when you're online about when a platform might be mugging you off, you can see their eyes lighting up. And you can see, I've had kids come up to me and say, look, they show me their phone and I go, what? I've deleted Instagram, I've deleted TikTok, because they completely understand it. So the steps that you need to take and the awareness that all of us need to have to be safer in this world when we're using digital technology aren't as huge or daunting as I think we might fear they could be.
Are we helped by our government in particular at the moment? We've had the Online Safety Act. When you talk to government, and I hope that government listens, are you impressed or not impressed?
The Online Safety Act took too long to come to pass. It was 5 years going through Parliament, or maybe even longer. Ofcom were given a time limit of 18 months to implement the Act as a regulator, independent regulator, empowered by the Act. We're beyond that now, and things are still being sorted and looked at, and codes of practice are being tweaked. So it's just taken too long. And I think that's a measure of the dusty old relic of a world in which we live. And it's causing, I think, many problems for society. We live in a world that has done pretty well up until now at moving quite slowly, because if you move slowly, you can go cautiously and you change things carefully. If you move too fast, you can cause problems. You can't do that when you're talking about problems created by technology, because the technology moves at lightning pace. And we've given social media a 2-decade head start in a race that they're moving faster in. So we have to move at lightning speed. So when it comes to governments, they've tried, but they have not moved fast enough. And the disappointing thing is, if I talk to, there's so many other bereaved parents. It's sadly a growing number. But when we get together and we talk, the most disappointing thing, the hardest thing for any of us to bear is inaction, because we know that inaction is letting us get further behind in that race.
And what does inaction look like? I mean, is that Liz Kendall not returning your calls? Is that not being heard? What is it?
I think we're on a pivot point, because inaction has looked like many things. It's looked like secretaries of state kicking the can of the Online Safety Act when it was a bill going through Parliament down the road and insisting on pre-legislative scrutiny, which was a time-consuming process. It probably led to a better act, to be fair, but it took time. And there was this, I can't remember the number of secretaries of state, 8 secretaries of state, 5 prime ministers, something like that. I can't remember the figures. There's so many that it took to get the act. And then when the current government came to power, there were really promising signs. Together with other bereaved families, we were in the office of Peter Kyle, who was the DSIT secretary of state at the time. He said he took this matter very seriously and he'd do something about it. 18 months or more went by and next to nothing was done. That caused all sorts of problems. But now there seems to be a change of attitude, and there seems to be some tough talking and an acceptance that where we are, the status quo, is not acceptable, that it's causing too many problems. It's spreading too much misery. There's too many parents who are rightly concerned about their children, and something has to change, and that change has to come at lightning speed in governmental terms.
Right. There has been an interesting story today from Instagram, which is saying that for the first time, Meta, which is the parent company, will proactively alert parents to searches by their child on Instagram for harmful material, as long as parents and teens have enrolled in the Teen Accounts Experience in this country, America, Australia and Canada. So, I mean, that, for people who don't know, is where on your teenager's account you have some kind of access. Your teenager has said, I am under 18 and this is the parental, ultimate parental control. So you have to have had that kind of initial bond. But that's a move in the right direction, isn't it?
Well, firstly, I think if I was a parent unaware of a mental health problem with my child, unaware that they may be self-harming or even thinking about suicide, of course I'd want to know. I'd want to know so that I could do something about it. So I think that goes without saying. But if you look behind this headline, I think it's entirely a PR move. This is based on experience. Every time there's tough and difficult news that comes out. When we first told Molly's story, there was a whole load of changes that Adam Mosseri, the head of Instagram, announced that they would no longer allow graphic self-harm content, for example. Not quite sure why they were allowing it in the first place, but at least that was a change in 2018 when Molly's story was first told. But every time there's a tough bit of comms to negotiate, from a PR point of view, they so often announce a new safety measure. And then with the benefit of time and hindsight, you can look back and see that the safety measures don't do what Meta say. If you take Teen Accounts alone, I think they claim, if I remember the numbers rightly, there are 53 different tools on Instagram's teen accounts. Now, the Molly Rose Foundation, together with a Facebook whistleblower who knows the inside workings of both Meta and Instagram, Arturo Behar, together with an American organisation called Fair Play, who looks into these things, and others. So there was a group of us all looked into the teen accounts. We could analyse 47 of those 53 accounts, and in our opinion, Meta would disagree with this, but in our opinion, only 8 performed as Meta described. So they brag about over 50 tools to keep kids safe. We don't think they deliver on that. And that's dangerous because that can create a false sense of safety. If parents switch off and think, oh, look, it's fine, I've switched on the teen accounts, they'll be safe now, and they're not working, it's worse than not having them sometimes.
You're absolutely right. And also the thing that you said just a couple of moments ago, Ian, is absolutely spot on. Why is that stuff there in the first place? And you've got to think about the people who create these sites, who create that content. You know, these aren't faceless machines. There are people involved at every level in this. We've only got a couple of moments left in, and I mean, I hope this isn't too painful of me to ask you to do this, but can we just talk a tiny bit about Molly? Because what absolutely shines through in your film is just what a gorgeous, gorgeous creature she was. And as you said, she was absolutely adored by her wonderful friends. And she deserves to be here in this room with us, actually, doesn't she? I know she would always be with you, but just tell us a bit more about her.
She, well, I would say as her dad, but she was, I've got 3 lovely daughters. Molly was the youngest, and she was the most amazing of persons. She had, she was sort of emotionally intelligent, bright, but not sort of super brilliant at school. And the most impressive thing about her was she was never quite like being the centre of attention. But if she felt something wasn't right, if I was perhaps picking on one of her sisters at the dinner table or something, I could remember her eyes flicking between us at the dinner table, and she'd be weighing up what was going on. And she'd gather the information, she'd make up her mind, and if she thought I'd crossed the line, she'd shout out and put her hand up and shout, "Stop it, Dad!" And she would stand up for anything that she felt was unjust or unfair. One of the most caring people. She was only 14 when she died, but she was one of the most caring people I've ever known. And I think that does come out through Molly's friends. I think that does come out in the film. And I urge anyone to see it. It's in cinemas. It premieres this weekend on Sunday, the 1st of March. And it's on Channel 4, not tonight, in fact. It's on Channel 4, a different Thursday, next Thursday. Thursday the 5th.
Right, my apologies.
At 9 p.m. No,
it's a real pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. I do think it's a really, really remarkable film, and I would urge everybody to watch it. Really lovely to meet you. You're an amazing person, Ian, for doing what you do. And it's appreciated by many, many of us.
Thank you.
So it's Channel 4 next Thursday.
Well, next Thursday the 5th, yeah.
Got you. Thank you very much, Ian. This is Times Radio. It is 4:05 to 4.
Chloe Tilley and Callum MacDonald on Times Radio Breakfast with Visit Scotland. Discover Times Radio's essential weekend briefing, where intelligent conversation meets incisive analysis of all the big stories making the headlines. Exploring the wider news agenda with guests from across politics, business, the arts and more. Chloe Tilley and Callum MacDonald on Times Radio Breakfast. Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 with Visit Scotland. Start your story in Scotland with visitscotland.com/winter.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
When you leave a gift in your will to guide dogs, where could it lead? It might lead to our specialists helping someone regain their independence, like Jenny.
I'd just gone from everything to nothing. She gave me my freedom back. She gave me my confidence back.
Your gift to guide dogs could lead to a future where lives are transformed. Find out how to make your life-changing will for free. Search Guide Dogs, Free Wills.
Guide Dogs.
If you could sail anywhere in the world, where would you go? With Oceania Cruises, our small luxurious ships allow us to dock in boutique ports in 600 stunning destinations. We offer a more immersive experience and a personalized service, creating unique travel memories. From the Caribbean to the Mediterranean and the finest cuisine at sea, it can only be Oceania Cruises. Visit oceaniacruises.com or your travel agent.
The Wix Peacock Awards on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. The Wix Kitchen and Bathroom Sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
We have been asking for your proudest moment of the week, for a chance, of course, to win that all-important £250 Wix voucher as part of our Wix Proud as a Peacock Weekly Awards. Lots of really good and touching entries this week, but I have chosen the winner fee. Are you ready?
I am ready. Would you like a drum roll?
If you can do one. It's Fee's birthday tomorrow, and I think that just illustrates how up for it she is.
Went a little bit Keith Moon.
Gail says, what's making me feel proud is hauling myself out of a warm bed into the harsh, cold, wet weather of Edinburgh and helping out a fellow runner. Dev and I are pictured here. She's on the right and is severely sight impaired, and I'm her guide runner around a 5 kilometre park run. The first time I've met this inspiring lady, she is running the Edinburgh Marathon. Wow. That is extremely impressive. Well, well done to Dev for even thinking about doing it. And well done to Gail for being her guide. That's just incredibly impressive. I'm just showing Fee the image of them. Can I be proud of me and also of Dev?
Oh, good Lord, yes.
Says Gail. They're up on what looks like a slightly breezy hillside, and they're helping each other out. So you and Dev can share the £250 Wix voucher. We'll be in touch to get all the details we need, and those Wix vouchers will be on the way to you soon. If you'd like the chance to win one of these vouchers, send us your proudest moment of the week on WhatsApp 0333 003 2353, or get in early, why not, for next Thursday. Email Jane and Fee at times.radio.
The Wix Peacock Awards on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. The Wix Kitchen and Bathroom Sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
Well done, Gail. Well done, Dev. And I hope the marathon in Edinburgh goes well for you. And the training is, not weather impacted. We hope for the best.
Yes, a very, very best of luck from me as well. That's it from us for this week.
Our producer today was Felix Forbes. And our technical operator, although I see I thought he'd left, was Ryan Boyden. Sometimes he scarpers, you can't blame him. John Pienaar's next.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Fee. Thank you, Jane. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar. This is Times Radio Drive, and here are the headlines. It's understood the government won't give the assisted dying bill for England and Wales more time in the House of Lords, which means it's likely to fail. And meanwhile, Jersey's voted to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults. And coming up, Baroness Amos, the chair of the National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation on how NHS maternity units often cover up harmful errors in childbirth, and is Britain ready to go to war? The Armed Forces Minister Al Khan thinks not and says we only have 3 to 5 years before we have to fight. Well, look at what needs to be done.
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with Eliza Phillips.
Thank you. Good afternoon. The killer, Ian Huntley, is in life-threatening condition after a prison attack. The 52-year-old killed schoolgirls Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman in 2002. He was found in a pool of blood in his cell in HMP Franklin earlier. Police and teachers are braced for school wars being whipped up on social media, including teenagers being encouraged to bring knives to class. The Met Police have begun an operation in response to social media posts dividing schools into teams and urging them to be violent. Laura Trott is the Shadow Education Secretary.
We have a threat of violence in schools across the country because of a social media fuel campaign that's not just on TikTok, it's also on Snap and other platforms, that nothing is being done about. Parents are being written to by the police warning them about what is going on in their schools. How have we allowed this to happen as a country? This is fundamentally wrong. Social media is not safe for young people. This is just another example. I don't see any government action on this, and I definitely don't see any government action more broadly on social media.
Meanwhile, parents will soon be able to get alerts if their child repeatedly searches for harmful content on Instagram. The social media platform says from next week, anyone using supervision settings will be told if a teenager seeks out posts about suicide or self-harm. Spain will be able to veto the entry of British travellers to Gibraltar and refuse residency permits on security grounds under a post-Brexit treaty. The agreement, published earlier, ends almost a decade of limbo for the British overseas territory since the referendum result. It's understood the government won't give the assisted dying bill for England and Wales more time in the House of Lords, which means it's likely to fail. Hundreds of amendments are being debated over the legislation, which has to get through by the end of the parliamentary session in May. Labour peer Lord Faulkner, who backs it, says it's not for the Lords to say that they know better.
This is an issue about an urgently required change in the law that has both popular support and the support of the democratically elected members of the Commons. And it's being blocked by a small number of Lords.
Young people are less likely to find jobs if they live for free at home with their parents. That's according to the government's WorkSAR, who's been speaking to Times Radio. Alan Milburn, a Labour former health secretary, says a higher proportion of people living at home into their 20s is harming employment.
Everybody talks about the bank of mum and dad. It's now the house of mum and dad as well, isn't it? So this is happening. And sometimes even when kids leave, they boomerang back. So that's a well-known phenomenon. I think it speaks to a wider concern, to be honest, because obviously there is this neat cohort of about 1 million young people. And by the way, it's very heavily correlated with social disadvantage.
And Jeremy Corbyn is to become the leader of your party. He emerged victorious from the long power struggles at the New Socialist Group. The former Labour leader beat Zara Sultana, the Coventry South MP, in the battle for the role. And for a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker.
John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive with ServiceNow.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for your company. Injuries and harm to newborn babies during childbirth are being covered up by hospitals. Deaths of newborns, in some cases babies who survive delivery and die in the delivery room, are wrongly registered as stillbirths, simply to avoid a coroner's inquest into what happened. These are some of the latest shocking findings from the review of maternity care by the former Cabinet Minister Baroness Amos. And Lady Amos is going to be joining me live on the programme. The review also points to evidence that women from ethnic minorities and poorer homes suffer worse consequences of negligence because of racism and discrimination. It is not the first time these concerns have been raised. A report in 2022 suggested 3/5 of recorded stillbirths were unreliable. So why are we seeing this? Another remarkable indictment of the country's maternity care here in 2026. We'll be talking about it on today's show with the author of the review. And later on the programme, an extraordinary warning from a serving government minister. We could be fighting a major war with Russia within 3 to 5 years. Britain is not ready to fight, let alone win, and all of us, the public and our politicians, need to be ready for the sacrifices that will be needed to make us all war ready. Tell me what you're thinking. Send me a text, 87222. Start with the word Times, or tweet to Times Radio, at Times Radio. Share your thoughts. First, though, let's catch up on the story then with Eleanor Hayward, the Times health editor. Good to see you, Eleanor. Thanks for coming in.
Hi.
Eleanor, as I say, we've seen and heard, haven't we, many accounts of the poor state of our maternity care services. These latest findings, though, they're still shocking.
Yeah, I think every time you read about it, it's shocking. I think there's been so many reports and each one is really distressing to read. I mean, I guess the hope, and I think everyone agrees, is that this leads to change. It's striking in a way that the themes are almost always the same in these reports. It's women aren't listened to, there's cultural issues, there's cover-up cultures, and there's also just a lack of investment. There's like hospital buildings falling down and things like that. And I think this must be, you know, there must have been about a dozen of these reports in recent years. Yeah. And the specific circumstances change sometimes, but the key themes are always pretty similar.
Just on the what we're talking about in the substance of this latest review, that the cover-ups we're talking about here, what do we mean by cover-ups? What sort of thing do we mean?
I think there's a general situation where women suffer like extremely distressing harms and they have to be the ones to fight to find out what went wrong. They have to be the ones to like battle with lawyers and battle with hospital management. There's no one, if someone makes a mistake, they're not holding their hands up and saying, I made a mistake, I got something wrong. And that means that often women are left blaming themselves and they're thinking, I'm the one who's failed. I'm the one who's done something wrong when they've done nothing wrong.